Welcome back, everyone, to the Gender Fluency audio recordings. I'm Jose Domingo Cruz, and in the summer of 2017, I talked with Robert Long and Charlie Bell about fluency, gender, and working as instructors in Japanese university English classes. Today's conversation topic is making students more relaxed in gender discourses.
Okay, good morning, Jose and Charlie.
Gentlemen.
Good morning.
So today we're going to talk about how men and women can be more relaxed in gender discourses. And I've noticed, as you have, Jose, when we were videotaping our own participants, that they were often quite ill at ease when they were talking with each other.
I don't know, you know, like it was a situation where just about anybody would be ill at ease. We put them in a room, we get them so that they're talking. Specifically in my situation, I told them, don't talk until I say go. There's a camera on them, they're strapped to microphones. If your personality doesn't allow you to relax very easily, as most normal people across almost all cultural strata or types, you're going to get nervous in that situation to some degree. How we train them for something like that, I think that's something that, you know, honestly, I haven't addressed specifically in my classrooms.
Well, that is a serious question. I mean, how do you get students more relaxed when they're talking to the opposite sex? And it's a big problem because some Japanese males and females have no trouble in their first language. But sadly enough, there's still a good percentage. Some reports that I've read in social media said that about 40% of all males are still virgins in their 40s.
In Japan?
In Japan.
Okay.
So the question is, how can we help these kind of social misfits or people that are too reserved? And maybe this might be maybe 20, 30% of our own students?
I think that it sounds a bit cliched. Sorry, but... like even something as simple as like, because obviously these were strangers, right? These students that have met each other for the first time. Even just a simple ice-breaking activity, I'm not entirely sure what that would consist of. It could be anything from, I don't know, like sharing some kind of interesting information with one another. But I was also thinking about maybe introducing the idea of board games or some kind of game so that their first interaction isn't just some very kind of contrived conversation between two people trying to get personal information, but rather two people talking over. I mean, obviously you can't sit them down and give them a whiskey in class, which might be more effective, but sitting them down, getting them to do some kind of fun activity together might be a good way of, I don't know, making them feel a little bit more I don't know, free.
If I might speak for Bob, I think the reason why he set up those two-person conversations that we videotaped and then put on the website was to try and mimic the situation a lot of these kids will find themselves in when they go to a conference, when they go to or they have a presentation and they have questions or one-to-one conversations with people who listen to their presentations at a conference. And suddenly, without any introduction, without having ever met this person before, they have to answer a question and have to answer follow-up questions. I think that's what you were trying to mimic and get them ready for and to see how they would do in that situation, right? Especially male to female.
Right. Well, I mean, most of our encounters in life, we don't have these nice icebreakers where we're at lunch, we meet someone's friend, and we first time meeting. How well do they do it in their first language and second language? Now, one of the issues that I came across when I was teaching this advanced English D class several years ago was that I realized the students had a hard time initiating a discussion with someone they didn't know. And it got to the point where I would actually give them a quota, or you have to talk to one person that you don't know for 30 seconds or a minute, and then tell me about it the next week. And it took about 4 weeks for them to actually get enough courage to do that. And gradually they began to enjoy it. They actually met new people. They actually had a good time to have a conversation. Actually go 5 minutes, 10 minutes. and then they, you know, we would go to two people, three people. But I don't think, and I think it's a good way of changing them in terms of their personality to start a new habit. I don't know how they continued after the class was over. They may have just gotten back to their old personality and old ways, but I think unless you really challenge them to actually change their habits, their conversational habits, nothing much will happen after we're gone.
I think one thing that I do, though, in class, though, is I try, and I'm sure that, you know, tacitly or in the backs of their minds, they know this, but I tell them that English language culture, or the entire culture of English, but specifically its language culture, doesn't have the same kind of stratification that Japanese does. Mm. And when these guys are learning English as a foreign language and they don't see as many real-life situations of people from what you would think were higher level or higher class people speaking to people who wouldn't be in the same sort of social class that you would see in a second language situation. Kids who just go back to their Japanese life can't really grasp that concept that we try to be more egalitarian with each other and we try to use that in our language. Mm. They get snippets of it, but they get it wrong. Like the whole idea of, for example, first names. Mm. I know a lot of teachers who try to break through with a lot of these kids, especially if they're younger, you know, 27, 28 years old, and they say, oh, call me Dave, call me John, and they give their first name to these kids. And with the Japanese kids thinking, oh, well, that's the way that, you know, English speakers are, they speak to everybody by their first names. Mm. And I found it a little bit off-putting as a 55-year-old man being addressed without leave, without permission by a kid and say, Haro, Jose. Mm-hmm. It was off-putting. And if you're not careful about it, these kids, because they're in a foreign language situation, don't get the same opportunities to see real-life English being used in second language. So the things that we use, we have to remember we're in foreign language situations as opposed to second language situations too.
True. So I want to come back to your idea of like these habits outside of the classroom.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the possibilities are like, but I mean, how about organizing some kind of social activity or social event outside of the classroom? Mm. Where the students can get together, and so you're kind of free of the pressure of it being an English lesson, so that they would maybe interact with each other in a more natural way.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not sure how you could do it in English, but...
Yeah, I mean, when I was having my students do it, it was all in Japanese. It was just getting...
Oh, just in Japanese?
Japanese.
Was all in Japanese? Yes, oh, right, Japanese. Okay.
They were still terrified of talking to someone in Japanese that they didn't know.
Okay, well, that changes everything. Okay, I thought you were talking about them speaking to each other in English, and I was quite impressed.
Yeah, but I mean, if they could, I mean, and I said, if you could switch over to English, that's fine. But, you know, sometimes it was, sometimes it didn't, sometimes it didn't work. Depends on who you pick out.
Okay,
but,
right.
But I would point out that when I was in Britain and I'm on the train, that I would talk to my partner, because I'm there for an hour to go up to York or wherever.
You mean the person you were sitting to?
And sitting next to, yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't... It's just the person who would just happened to be sitting
next
to you.
Just happened to whoever sitting next to me. Yeah. Or the train was late, which was common in Britain. Talk to the person.
Sure.
Which was in Britain, it was a big... No, we don't do that.
That's right.
So...
Actually, yeah. Charlie.
I do that. Yeah. The last time I was on a flight.
When Bob says things like, well, you don't do that in Britain, you would disagree?
Oh, no. I mean, the last time I was on a long-distance flight by myself, I was going to Thailand, and we stopped off very briefly. Well, it was about a 7 or 8 hour trip from the UK to Bahrain, and I sat down next to a guy, and we talked for about 6 hours. Mm. Never met him before.
Yeah.
A lot old, maybe sort of mid-40s, so quite a bit older than me. Mm. But yeah, we just... talked and talked, and really interesting too. Mm. And the flight went like that. Didn't
the most British people do or don't talk?
I don't know. I can't generalize like that. But certainly, if somebody started talking to me, then I'm happy to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, with you know headsets and earphones, like people are in their own world. I wouldn't want to interrupt someone. But yeah, I would talk to someone, especially if you know I felt like that they were going to talk back to me.
Okay, so do we have any specific ideas about how to get students to be more relaxed and how to initiate more in conversations?
I think throwing them into, you know, these social milieus in their first language definitely has benefits. But I think it has to be a multi-pronged kind of approach, because you're talking not just about language skills here, you're talking about general personal skills here. And as long as it's a multi-pronged approach, for example, that I would encourage that. I wish I could do that at my university, but because I'm a part-time teacher, I don't have as many opportunities to pull something like that off. But just get these kids to talk to more students in their own classroom. Create the structure of the classroom so they do talk to more students in the classroom as opposed to the same four or five friends out of this classroom of 25 or 30 people every week. If they're always sitting with the same friends, they're not getting any real exposure to social situations that you're trying to get them into, which is like meeting people they don't know, looking friendly and affable to anyone. They only know how to talk to their friends. And if you keep them in those situations where they always choose their own partners, that will be a bit limiting. So I think trying to structure your classroom just so that then if it's just like practicing a four-line dialogue that they have to go and talk to somebody they don't know, I think that would be helpful, Charlie.
To be honest, I think obviously we're talking about a limited set of students. In my own teaching situation, whilst my students are lower proficiency than Bob's school, I don't have the same issue. Like, they will talk to each other. They'll talk to each other in Japanese. They'll talk to each other in English at the sort of the low level that they work at. In terms of how to get them to relax, I mean, it sounds a bit stupid, but maybe something like playing background music in the classroom. I don't know.
That actually does help, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've read stuff about it. I mean, I haven't actually done it before. It sounds kind of embarrassing, so I don't know.
At the start, especially with kids just out of high school, they're so not used to it.
It would be a bit strange, right?
It would be a bit strange. But after a while, they do get used to it. But then I asked myself, that background music, in my case, wouldn't be necessary if everyone's always talking. If there's a lot of quiet time, then yeah, a lot of that sort of like awkward quiet time can be filled in by BGM. But maybe that's something to address. How much quiet time do you have in your classroom kind of thing?
Yeah, good point.
Okay, well, thanks for coming, guys.
No problem. Thank you, sir.